Morning, everyone. How's everybody doing today? All right, so if you were here last week, Pastor John talked about trusting God, and he talked about Niagara Falls, having weeks of Niagara Falls. Well, the Niagara Falls kept flowing this week, and it was a little hectic, so I got a text message from Pastor John on Monday night and said, I may need you to preach on Sunday. So for those of you that do not know, Pastor John's father-in-law did pass away Tuesday morning. So I got a text on Tuesday morning that said, you are preaching on Sunday. And it just happened that it was just a crazy week. And and I realized like these topics of trusting God really applied these last few weeks for us as a staff and for us as a congregation. There were several other funerals that went on. It was just a crazy week. So hopefully God uses all these things for us and teaches us things out of these moments. And the transition from offering is right into my topic today. It's going to be on giving, but it's really an opportunity to trust God. So the passage for today comes from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 to 15. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 to 15. I will put them that on the screen for you. So we'll start in verse 9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine. My child, don't reject the Lord's discipline. Don't be upset when he corrects you. For the Lord corrects those he loves, just as a father corrects a child in whom he delights. Joyful is the person who finds wisdom, the one who gains understanding. For wisdom is more profitable than silver, and her wages are better than gold. Wisdom is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Now, for those of you that don't know, at the 10:30 service, I'm typically responsible for the announcements and introducing the offering. And a phrase that I commonly say is that for those that call Trinity their home, we believe what the Bible says. And the Bible tells us to be obedient in our giving because money is one of the biggest competitors with God for our hearts. And I say that the Bible talks about money more than any other subject. Now, I've heard this before, and I assumed it was true, but I never actually checked myself. So in my studies this week, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't providing the 10:30 service fake news. So I searched the internet. I searched a few things. I searched most common topics in the Bible. I searched how often is money talked about in the Bible. And the general consensus was that money is the number one subject, but I got varying results on the number of times that money was in my concordance. Now, for those of you that don't know what a concordance is a thick, heavy reference book that contains every single word in that particular translation of the Bible that you're using. For this week, I used the NIV. Now, it lists the words, it lists the number of times that word is found, and it also lists every single verse in which that word is found. And then it gives you a number to look up in the back of the book that tells you the definition of that word in the context in which you're reading it. I use that a lot when I prepare for sermons. So getting back to the number of times that a word is found, I decided to look up several words that I felt would be common in the Bible, and here are the results. So these are very common: pray, praise, glory, faith, love. As you can see, you know, I put it in order, so it gets more and more common. And love, after God and the Lord, you know, that kind of makes sense. The Bible is about God, so I would hope that God and Lord would show up more times than anything else. But love seems to be the one that comes after. However, that was before I looked up words that had to do with money. You can put that up, Riley. So now money, you know, pray, there's not too many words to look up besides pray. Praise, glory. With money, there's many types of words that have to do with money. Now, these are the words that I just happened to come up with while I was doing my little, you know, mini research. And I found that there were 1,263 words related to money. Now, the general consensus of the internet when I searched from reputable sites was that there's 2,350 verses related to the topic of money in the Bible. That's almost, three times love? So it confirmed what I've been saying at the 10:30 service, that yes, after God, money is the number one subject in the Bible. So maybe you're thinking money's bad, or that God views money in a negative light. Well, it's not bad, and he doesn't. In fact, money itself is neutral. If you think about it, money is neutral. It's a piece of paper or a piece of metal that has value, but money itself is neither good or bad. It's how we view money and how we use money that makes it good or bad. And there's a misquoted Bible verse that we hear a lot in society, and it's that money is the root of all evil. Well, you know, most of you know that's not true. But a lot of people take that for granted and they don't look that up. But if they did look it up, they would realize that is misquoted. Because the verse is 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. And here's how the verse really goes. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people, craving money, have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. So the issue at hand is not money. It's the love of money. The problem arises when you make money your identity or you make money your idol. Craving money is the root of all kinds of evil. I mean, we just look at American society. We can see the love of money all around us, and we can see the destruction that comes from it. There's embezzlement and insider trading and mismanagement of other people's money on one end of the spectrum. There's robbery and drug crimes and violence on the other side of the spectrum. How many of you have seen the movie Jerry Maguire? Anybody? A few. Well, anyway, if you haven't, Tom Cruise is a sports agent, and he's representing Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, which is a pro football player. And there's a scene when Cuba Gooding's character is trying to motivate Tom Cruise to get him more money in his next contract. And he gets to the point where he makes Tom Cruise repeat a phrase over and over on the phone until he's yelling, and it's this phrase, "Show me the money! Show me the money!" If this doesn't describe the majority of American culture today, I don't know what does. See, a good job plus good money equals you've made it. Net worth and material possessions create your identity. This is why Forbes magazine publishes the 100 richest people in the world every year. Why there's a TV channel called Wealth. Why pro athletes ask for more and more and more money. Why every game show has money as the grand prize. Why MTV produces shows like Cribs. Why the top advertisers that we see on media outlets are companies that sell consumer goods. So during my research, I found another website called marketingcharts.com. And I found a bar graph that showed America's top 10 largest advertisers on all media outlets. TV, radio, newspaper, magazine. And as of July 2016, here's the top 10 from top to bottom. Procter & Gamble, P&G. They mostly sell medical and therapeutic products, Tylenol, Head & Shoulders. But number two, AT&T. Three, General Motors. Comcast, Verizon, Ford, American Express, Chrysler, Amazon, and Samsung. So 9 of the top 10 advertising companies that we see on media outlets sell cell phones, cars, cable TV, credit cards, and electronics, and Amazon, of course, which sells everything. But I want you to pay attention when you see commercials or see advertisements. See, these companies are not advertising products. They're advertising lifestyles that go along with purchasing these products. GM isn't selling you cars that take you from A to B. They're selling you cars that impress your neighbors. They're selling you cars that make your drive to work incredible and relaxing. They're selling you cars that make you lie to your wife about your dog going missing so you can take that dog for a drive around the block a few times. That's a commercial that's on TV right now, by the way. But here, think of the car company mottos. Mercedes, the best or nothing. The BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Dodge, grab life by the horns. Honda, the power of dreams. Now, it's okay to have a nice car, but you have to be careful because you need to make sure you view it for what it is. Basically, what these advertisers are saying is that money buys happiness. Now, this isn't necessarily a lie. Sometimes money does buy happiness. But I would rephrase the statement to say, Money buys temporary happiness. Until the new model of your current car comes out, until the new iPhone is released, until the grass is greener on the other side. And then money is buying, I wish I had that. Now here's a reality check for all of us. The love of money buys a sense of false hope in an inanimate object. Money buys a sense of false hope in an inanimate object. Not God, not a person, but an inanimate object that could care less about you. See, the Bible talks a lot about money because God knows the power that money can have over us. And he also knows what else money can buy. Money can buy resentments. Money buys envy. It buys feelings of inadequacy. It buys false identities. It buys anxiety, a decrease in family time, conflicts in relationships, absent parents, nannies that are raising your kids, a decrease in trust because it buys more people showing up in your life that have ulterior motives. It buys the stress of maintaining a certain level of income because you and your family are used to it. What 1 Timothy 6:10 is referring to when it says some people craving money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. These are the kinds of sorrows that this verse is referring to. Again, money is not bad. Having a nice car is not bad. But the love of those things is when it becomes a problem. So, what message is God trying to relay in this morning's message? Or in this morning's passage. Verses 9 to 10 say, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine. The New Living Translation that we use at Trinity says that, says best part in verse 9. But many translations use the word first fruits. So the first thing I want to do in this passage is I want to dive into the second part of verse 9. Honor the Lord with the best part or the first fruits of everything you produce. So let's find out what the origin of first fruits is. We have to travel back in time to the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verses 9 to 13. I'm just going to paraphrase. I'm not going to read it. But basically is what's happening is God is speaking to Moses, and he's telling him what to say to the Israelites. Moses is supposed to tell them that once they reach the promised land, once they're in Canaan, and they reap their first harvest, this is what they are to bring. They're supposed to bring a sheaf of their first fruits, a one-year-old male lamb with no blemishes, a grain offering mixed with flour and olive oil, and a small portion of wine. This is the offering that they were called to bring with the first harvest that they received in the promised land. So what's a sheaf? A sheaf is a bundle of grain, not a basket or a few grains. It's a bundle of grain from the first batch that they harvested. A bundle of grain could significantly provide food for a family. A lamb, he wants the best lamb. He doesn't want the bottom lamb. He wants the best lamb. God wants wine and olive oil, which are also high-valued products at that time. See, God was asking for their best, their first fruits, to sacrifice an offering to him. So let's get back to Proverbs. God is asking for the same thing in this passage, but he's adding something extra to the end. He's adding a reward. If you honor God with your wealth, with your money, with your possessions, and you sacrifice your first fruits as an offering, he will fill your barns with grain and overflow your wine vats. Now, we do have to be careful here. This is not the prosperity gospel. Because we have to read on. We have to read these verses in context. This is not saying that you will be crazy rich if you follow this command. Because if we read on, we will realize this is not the case. You may still pay the price for how you used money in the past. You may still go through tough times. God may not prosper you immediately because he still needs to teach you or correct you. but anything that we view as tough or hard, God views as a father that is disciplining his children. He has a favorable and loving spirit behind his discipline, behind his corrections and his teachings, not a hateful one. So I will sum up this in a few sentences, verses 9 through 12. God promises rewards. He really does. But he does not promise timetables. God promises rewards, but he does not promise timetables when those rewards will be given to you. Like God, I also can't promise you barns of overflowing grain if you honor God with your wealth. But what I can promise you is a dynamic sense of feeling blessed and fully provided for by God. I can promise you a decrease in anxiety when it comes to money. I can promise you less stress and more joy in your life. See, God's rewards aren't always monetary, but they are greater than any happiness that a dollar could bring you. Now, many of you have heard my testimony. I've talked about my drug addiction, my selfishness, crimes I've committed, things I've done in the past. But I finally get a chance to tell you a story about honoring God with my wealth and the rewards that I received because of it. Now, most of you know that I used to be a pharmacist, and I made good money, 6 digits to be exact. So I was well off. But I bought into the show me the money mentality. I bought into the way society, most of society, views money. In fact, the love of money is why I went to pharmacy school in the first place, because I saw pharmacists as rich and successful. So drugs were the final thing that took me out before I became a Christian, before I came to God. But money contributed as well. Now, I was sort of good with money. I did save up a decent retirement account, and I did put money away. But the day that I got arrested and fired in 2010, I went from making 6 digits to 1 digit, a big fat zero. And the problem was is that what I said earlier about what money can buy, my lifestyle matched my income. So my money wasn't going to last very long. I had some significant bills to pay, things, with no income coming in, my money was not going to last too long. Well, thankfully, I have amazing parents, and they allowed me to move back in with them, because they saw change in me, but so I'm so thankful to them. But fast forward to 2012. Now, I still had money because I had put stuff away, but over the last 2 years, 2010 to 2012, no new income was coming in. Why no income? Well, one, I wasn't allowed to re-enter the pharmacy workforce because I was in a drug treatment program and I had to fulfill certain requirements before they would allow me to go back to work. Now, the cool thing was I was approved to go back to work in February of 2011, but my disability limited the types of jobs that I could apply for, and my criminal record didn't go over very well with most employers. So I had a lot of trouble getting jobs, and I didn't qualify for unemployment because I got terminated and for the reason I got terminated. So basically, no money was coming in at all. So I had to rely on the money that I had saved up over that time. And between those 2 years, I withdrew every dollar I could possibly withdraw from every location, and I put it into one place, just a checking account. And in February of 2012, I looked into the future and I saw by June, I would be out of money. I would be completely broke. I mean, no money anywhere. Now, I did have a roof over my head, and I had food available, but I'm not the type of person that wants to take advantage of people. I didn't want to live off my parents. So I began to have serious anxiety about my future. And I had a habit of checking my bank account too often, which made me worry even more, because I kept seeing that money go down and not go up. But here's something else that I did during those years of no income coming in. I gave to the church. $20 here, $10 there. Whatever I felt I could remove from my wallet that Sunday, I put in the offering plate. I forced myself to give no matter what. So back to February of 2012, I decided to apply for Social Security disability. I'm a prideful person, and I didn't want to do that. I felt like I can work. I don't need that, but I decided to apply. And many people told me that it takes a while, that you usually get denied the first time and you have to appeal. There's hoops to jump through. So I applied in February, And then in the meantime, waiting for this, I became more and more and more worried about my money, my financial future. And I was trying very hard to be smart with my money, but I had bills to pay. There was no way around that. So one day in April, 2 months later, I happened to check my bank account, and there was a large sum of money that had been deposited 2 days earlier. I won't get into how much, but it was so large that I did not believe it. I mean, I was completely skeptical from the gate. There has to be something wrong here. There has to be an error. So what did I do? Called my bank, and I talked to a person. I said, there's no way this is legit. This has to be an error. And the woman on the phone said, nope, this is a deposit from the Social Security office. So my skepticism said, I better call the Social Security office too. So I picked up the phone and called the Social Security office. And sure enough, I was approved for disability in less than 2 months. And they backdated my pay to February of 2011 when the pharmacy board said I could go back to work. They deposited a lump sum for 13 months of Social Security. Now, you know, if you know me, you know I'm a very emotional person. So you can see that I probably cried, and I cried a lot. It was tears of joy. I thanked God 100 times. I mean, I told him I didn't deserve it. I felt overwhelmed. You know, it was crazy. And some people would hear that story and they would call it coincidence. They would say, of course you got disability. You're legitimately disabled. You're not like some people that try to apply and cheat the system. You are disabled. You deserve disability. Some people may not think anything of it at all. But you know what I call it? Proverbs 3, verses 9 and 10. I honored God with my wealth, and he rewarded me. In those 2 years, though, this is why. I changed the way that I viewed and used money. I saw giving not as an obligation, but as an opportunity to trust God. See, I had no choice but to trust him because my money was about to be gone. I had to believe the truth of the Bible. I had to believe that God would come through for me. If you get anything out of today's message, I want you to get this. Don't view giving as an obligation. View giving as an opportunity to build a relationship with God and to trust God, a God that loves you and works for your good. And what do you think the first thing I did with that lump sum of money? I wrote a check for 10% and gave it to my church. Since I believe in tithing, I immediately wrote that check. Now, I don't push tithing down people's throat. That's what God called me to do. But I couldn't stop honoring God with my wealth at that point. He just rewarded me. That would be like slapping him in the face. He rewarded me because I trusted him. He rewarded me because I was obedient. I did what he asked, and he came through for me like he said he would. And today, I'm free from everything that money buys, the good and the bad. I don't worry about money at all. I give when God calls me to give. I have full and complete freedom from the love of money, and I trust God 100% with my finances. When he says give, I give, even on top of the 10% that I give to Trinity. So I want to tell you another quick story that happened pretty recently. I had to get new tires on my car to pass inspection. So I looked at my budget, and I planned to spend $1,000 on tires. I didn't want crappy tires. I wanted something good. I wanted all weather. I wanted, you know, 80,000-mile tires. And I told my mechanic what kind of price range I wanted. And so I planned to spend $1,000. I set it aside. So a few days before I bought my tires, I saw a news story about a youth football team in Chester, PA. Somebody broke into their equipment shed and stole all their equipment. Their helmets, their pads, their uniforms. You know, I felt like they just stomped on the happiness and dreams of these 11 and 12-year-olds. It's crazy, the evil of this world sometimes. And my heart broke for them. And thankfully, the reporter said that they started a GoFundMe account. If you don't know what GoFundMe is, it's a website on the internet that people can use to raise money. So I immediately went on that website, and I was ready to donate money. And I don't necessarily pray or specifically ask God how much I should give. I kind of just sit there and figure out a number, and he kind of agrees with me, disagrees with me. And the number that popped in my head was $250. And I felt like that was a significant amount that would make the person that put that account on GoFundMe. It would be significant. It wasn't 10 bucks. You know, I tried to make it impact. So guess how much my tires cost? $750.31. How crazy is that? Some people would call that coincidence. I call that honoring God with my wealth. And I call that Proverbs 3, 9 and 10 again. Now, I don't want you to mistake, what's happening here. These things don't always happen. But if you honor God with your wealth, they may. Because sometimes I hear people that start giving and their refrigerator breaks. Or, they get a flat tire. So sometimes there's things that you go through, but I don't want it to stop you from being obedient and honoring God with your wealth. Now, I tell these two stories for several reasons. Not to brag or to say, look at me, I'm awesome. I want you all to get to know me a little better, to see my heart and my passion for God. I want to inspire you to make changes in your life when it comes to finances. And I want to give you real life experiences that support the passage that we're talking about this morning. It proves, it's evidence. But one thing I want you to understand, that this has nothing to do with the amount of money that I gave or that I received. It has everything to do with trusting God and seeking His counsel when it comes to giving. Listen, I want to make this loud and clear. It's not about the percentage. It's about the relationship. It's not about the percentage. It's about the relationship with God. That's why we give. So here's what I don't want you to be. I don't want you to be the person, say you've never given before. I don't want you to be the person that says, well, God knows my situation. He knows I can't give right now. He knows that there's no way I can afford to give. And if I have some money left over, I'll put it in the plate. Well, if you think that way, you will never give. You will always find an excuse not to give. Notice the shape of these two verses, verses 9 and 10. It's an action followed by a reward. It's not the other way around. The action comes first. The blessing comes second. Don't wait until God blesses you before you give, because you might be waiting a long time. He's waiting for you to take the first step. He's waiting for you to start trusting Him. If you have never given some of your money to the church, don't think of it as giving to Trinity. Think about it as giving to God. Think about it as pursuing a relationship with God, not with the church. See, God built His church upon the rock. He's not worried about that. The church will be fine. He's worried about you. He's seeking a relationship with you. He wants you to trust Him. But here's a small warning. Don't give to be rewarded. Give because it's the right thing to do. Give because God calls us to give. Give because when you do, you will actually begin to manage the rest of your money better, because you're going to have to learn to live off of less money. You will realize that money's not so important, and it will help you gain wisdom and knowledge in regard to your finances. See, verses 14 and 15 say that wisdom is more profitable than gold, silver, or rubies. Giving brings wisdom. Giving brings trust in God, and giving will change your life. It changed mine, and it will change yours. Now, if you're still struggling with this whole idea, and I feel like it's a tough topic sometimes to talk about in church, but as you can see, there's 2,350 verses related to money, and I feel like the church doesn't talk enough about giving sometimes. But listen to what Psalms chapter 24, verses 1 to 2 say. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it. The world and all its people belong to Him. For He laid the earth's foundation on the seas and built it on the ocean's depths. Everything in this world belongs to God, including your money. He's just allowing you to use it. Listen, He's only asking you to return a small amount. You get to keep the rest. In my case, I'm giving 10%. I get to keep 90%. If you look at it that way, it doesn't make it so hard. Now, He doesn't want you to just be free with that other 90%. He does ask you to still honor Him with your wealth. But that's where it comes into the case of it's not about the percentage, it's about the relationship. You know, whatever he happens to call you to, 5%, you get to keep 95%. I mean, it's like, it's pretty awesome. And especially since, you know, for instance, you may say, oh, there's some churches out there that mismanage people's money, and you see these, you know, bad stories on the news about certain churches and pastors and things like that. But, you know, one thing I think of, for instance, at Trinity is, so I give 10% to the church, and I get to keep the other 90%. So what does that 10% do? Well, one thing it does is, in about a week or so, we're having VBS. We have kids coming from the community that don't necessarily go here and may not even know God. And we have a chance to speak to them for a week about God. And maybe they'll get to reach their parents for God. And your money contributes toward things like that. And I feel like Trinity, we are great stewards of our money. And we do very, very big things in this community. So you're not just, you know, building a relationship with God. You're also helping others without even knowing it. So when you look at things that way, it doesn't seem as hard to give. So give it a shot. Trust in his promises. Trust in his word. Trust what the Bible says. Trust in God's truths. God will provide for you. Again, you may not get overflowing vats of wine, but you will be blessed either way, more than you could possibly imagine. Giving is not an obligation. It's an opportunity to trust God. So, you might be wondering why this is sitting here, since it's been sitting there the whole time and I haven't touched it yet. But this is my illustration that I'm going to close my sermon out with. All right, so these are Skittles. Don't ask me why I chose Skittles. They're just colorful and friendly and they taste good. And my son's happy because he'll probably get to eat all these after church is over today. But think of this cup with all these Skittles. And I also use this Rubbermaid bin because I don't want to spill them all over the floor. So think of this cup as your monthly income. Now, the first example is somebody that hasn't given and they're just waiting to give. They don't think they can afford it. You know, they're going to wait until God, you know, blesses them and then they'll give. So you take a few out. Here's your mortgage payment, right? All right, they were stickier than I thought they were going to be. So here's your car payment, all right? Let's see. This isn't working. You know what? I'm going to do this. All right, so here's your groceries, right? Here's your electric bill. Here's your water bill. Here's your sewer bill. Here's gas. Maybe you go out to eat that week once. Maybe you stop for coffee. Oh, something comes up. You need to get tires. Oh, now you need your car inspected. You know, as we most people know that live in this world, a lot of things happen. Oh, I got to get my refrigerator fixed. I'm waiting till I have money to give to God. But how can I give to God when I don't have any left? So, here's is an example of the second person. This is a person that believes in bringing their first fruits to God. So, right off the top, 10%. Right? Here's your mortgage payment. Here's your car payment, electric bill, water bill, sewer, refrigerator, tires, fast going out to eat, grabbing some coffee, you know, whatever their expenses happen to be. Same result. But you gave to God, and you were obedient, and you're building a relationship with God, and you still have the same exact amount of money left over at the end. Now, the third example is somebody who brings their first fruits and honors God with their wealth and learns and gains wisdom and understanding. So you give the first 10% or whatever it happens to be for you. Here's your mortgage payment. Here's your car payment. Here's your sewer bill. Here's your water bill, et cetera, tires, refrigerator. Well, you know what? I have a can of coffee at home. I could probably make coffee at home. You know, I may waste a little bit, but it's definitely cheaper than going out and buying coffee every day. And you know what? Maybe I won't go out to eat this month. You know, maybe I'll just, give a little money and spend some time with my child. You know, maybe, maybe I'm going to buy a shirt or clothes or, you know, basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to start to to save my money. I'm going to stop spending money on things that I don't need. So now you gave to God, you paid all your bills, and you became smarter with your money. And here's what you have left over. Now, I can use this. You know what? I'll put some money away from my kids' college fund. You know, maybe I'll take my wife out to a restaurant that we usually can't afford this week. For me, I'm single, so maybe I'll save this for a date. Hint, hint. So basically, this Proverbs passage is telling us to honor God with our wealth, to honor God with our first fruits. And that the more you begin to do it, the more you become to learn, the more you gain wisdom and understanding, and you could be this person. So I encourage you, if you've never given before, I encourage you to give it a shot. Trust God. Find an opportunity to trust God. Thank you.